The views and opinions expressed by the guests on the following program do not necessarily represent those of Mark Radio, The Shepherd, or its advertisers.
From the studios of the Shepherd Radio Network, it's Afternoons with Mike. This next hour is all about our walk with Jesus, with local pastors, newsmakers, people who are making a difference for the gospel. Now, here is your host, Mike Gilland.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to my program, Afternoons with Mike, here on The Shepherd. With me today on the telephone line, not too terribly far away, Scott Humpston is the Family and Connections Pastor at First Baptist in Mount Dora. Scott, welcome to the program.
Hey, thanks, Mike. Thanks for having me on today.
This is really great. First time we've got to chat, and I'm looking forward to hearing your story, finding out how that you came to know the Lord, how you got called into ministry, and all of those good details. First of all, what part of the country did you grow up in?
So actually, I grew up in Central Florida for the most part. I was born in Brooksville, which is Hernando County, and lived in Orlando, Puerto Rico for a short time. And Lakeland was really my hometown. I lived there from 6th to 12th grade. Even lived a few years before that in Kansas and Tampa for a little bit. So I kind of all over. My father was a pastor.
All right. I was going to say, were you a military brat or what was going on there?
Yeah, partly for a few years in Kansas I was. He ended up as a chaplain at Fort Riley there in Kansas came back to Florida. And then he retired as the state chaplain for the Florida National Guard, actually. So, yeah, between the pastorate and the military, we moved around a lot, you know.
Now, even living in Puerto Rico, what was that like? What age were you when you were there?
I was pretty little then. And my mom and dad were at an English-speaking church near San Juan. And so I don't have a whole lot of memory of it. I think most of my memories come from my parents' memories of it, if that makes sense.
Oh, absolutely.
But for sure, you know, can't wait to go back at some point, hopefully when some of this craziness of our world is behind us. It's on my to-do list to head back there to visit the island.
Yeah, that's really a beautiful area, I'm sure. I've never been to Puerto Rico, but I've been to several other islands in the Caribbean. You can't go wrong on any day at all when you're in one of those places. It's a lot of fun.
No. Yeah, for sure. So, yeah, Central Florida really is my home. In fact, I tease people that I was born in Hernando County. My wife was born in Brevard County, which is the other coast, the East Coast. My oldest daughter was born here in Lake County. And then my next daughter was born in Volusia County. And then my son was born in Orange County. And my daughter was born in Seminole County. So we pretty much have Central Florida covered.
I think you do, geographically, all over the place, man. That's amazing. I can't.
And what's amazing about that too is my four kids were we've been in the same home the entire time. It just happened to be doctors and midwives and that sort of thing were in different places at the time. So.
Oh, that's so cool that you have been able to have that kind of heritage for your kids. And I'm sure that they are always going to look back on the oldest ones, looking back on those younger births. They'll have some memories of that, and that had to be pretty special.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, absolutely.
So how is it that you were able to escape what so many PKs, as they are called, people who have parents as a minister, preacher's kids, as it were, how is it that you were able to escape what so many have gone through where they don't want anything to do outside of once they get out of the home, they don't want anything to do with ministry? You followed in your father's footsteps here. To what do you attribute that?
Yeah, well, of course, God, you know, first and foremost. You know, my parents were not perfect people, but they did model Christ well for us, I think, for my two older sisters and myself. There was church was an expectation, and I saw their Christian walk lived out, you know, in their personal life as well as the, you know, in the pulpit life. mm-hmm. you might say. I never wanted to be a pastor. That wasn't my intent. Although my mom would ask me when I was little, hey, you think you want to grow up to be a preacher like your dad? I would always say no. And so it's kind of a roundabout way that God brought me to this point. It is intriguing nonetheless, but certainly, you know, just my mom and dad guiding me as a young person, in Christ through their example more than anything. And there were not heavy expectations put on me, I think, as a child, with church. I mean, there were certainly expectations there, but not, not heavy handed. And they certainly encouraged me in my own faith journey to, you know, to work that out. Right. From a small age, actually.
Yeah. And your own kids are getting to now grow up in that similar way. And I'm sure that you're applying some of those same principles with your own kids.
You know, absolutely. I think one of the biggest differences that we've tried to do in our family is where church is very vital. It's a big part of our life and our community. Really, Christ is even more vital. And so I've stressed with my two oldest girls, which are out of the home now, and, you know, that really Christ above all, and our two younger children as well, and that that church is important. And you know, obviously, church participation is important and vital, I think, to growth for children and families, but really Christ above that, and that we can get caught up in a church culture and not a Christ culture. And I think that leads to that can lead to some negative things if we allow it to.
Mm-hmm.
That's a fine balance. I tell people that, you know, I think as a pastor now in this role, that I have a very healthy, jaded perspective. I came into it knowing a lot, knowing the other side of it, you might say. And so I came into it again with open eyes, and that's been very healthy. I think I love what I do. And, my father also did too. You know, I'm working on a book and just about two chapters away from finishing it. And there's a chapter in the book about my dad. He passed on about a year and a half ago now. He never spoke ill of the pastorate. He never talked about people. He never shared at the dinner table, you know, oh, you know, those such and such people are, you know, driving me nuts, or, you know, he kept it, he was in that pastor role very, I guess I hate to use the term professionally, but he did it very well, and, never let us see too much of the heartache behind being a pastor. Now, he wrote about some of it in a book that he did for his family, for his children. And that was very helpful to me, actually, in writing my own book. But, so I just think that he did it well. He did it right. There were certainly things that he could have done better, I'm sure, in the pastorate, but he was certainly following God's calling. He saw it as, of course, his mission and not as something negative at all.
Now, you mentioned that you did not want to be in the ministry, and yet you became that. What was it that you were aiming for?
So I spent a majority of my life as an evangelist, actually, which allowed me to do ministry work. And we traveled all over the country. My family and I did for many years. In fact, for 10 plus years, we were in a motorhome traveling. And with my girls, my older girls, and then the two babies when they came along, they're about 18 months apart, my two youngest. And so we did that again for a long time. And so as an itinerant evangelist, I guess I had the benefit of ministering without some of the pressure of a local church. You know, I would go in for two or three days a week, depending on what the event was I was doing at a particular church, and then moving on from that. But when I took the current position that I'm in, really, it was a blessing to me and my family. It was through COVID, and I can talk about that if you'd like me to.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
So for 25 plus years, I traveled and using comedy and magic tricks and illusions to engage audiences, family audiences around not only the country, but the world. And in fact, in February of 2020. I had just gotten back from the UK, and I'd been over there several times the last few years, training others in ministry and working with churches and the Church of England and some other ministry opportunities that had arisen from there. And that was in February 2020. And in, of course, March.
Yeah, the next month.
We started hearing these things, you know, this undercurrent of cancellations. I had actually just returned from a weekend event in Pennsylvania and, you know, got a call about a cancellation for one of my events, and then another call and another call. And it was kind of like dominoes, you know. And so by the end of March, my April had canceled and my May had canceled. And I told my wife, if this goes into June, it's going to be a game changer for us, you know. I mean, we weren't sure what to do. And meanwhile, my local church, which had ordained me a few years earlier, First Baptist Church here in Mount Dora, we've been part of living in the Mount Dora community for 23 years. So I've been here a long time, although really I was always traveling somewhere, but we always referred to Mount Dora as our home. And my church reached out to me. They knew that my traveling was not happening. And they had been looking for a pastor to work with children and families. And they also didn't have anybody in the role of kind of a connections pastor. They all of a sudden, like churches everywhere, were thrown into trying to minister digitally.
Yeah, you know, virtually, right.
Yeah, and virtually. And so they asked me to help with that. And I did for several months through the spring of 2020 and into the summer. And then they called and asked if I would consider a position, a full-time staff position with them in July of 2020. And so the church voted, and so we prayed about it and took that position, which honestly, Mike, was not out of the realm of the scope of my thinking the last several years as I've gotten older. And I'm still not too old, I hope, but as I've gotten older and I have so many pastor friends around the country and around the world, about once a month, once every maybe 6 weeks, I would get a call from a pastor friend or an email from a friend of a pastor, and that would say, do you get tired of traveling? You know, would you consider coming to our church as a staff member? And so we had actually just in January of 20, been talking to a church in outside of Nashville, Tennessee, a friend of mine, pastors. I've been with them several times about a position there that they were looking at filling. And so it was in my mind, you know, God had been laying the foundation of this for the last few years. And so it was, again, really a blessing that I could go to my home church and be on staff, and I didn't have to sell my house and uproot my family and the roots, you know, growing here in Mount Dora have helped a lot, and been in this community a long time. And my pastor, Dr. Jameson, and we're about the same age. And as we were talking, because he treated it just like he would, you know, any other staff position, and with, you know, personnel interview and, you know, votes, all of that, even though I was a member of the church, we still treated it as if, you know, I was coming from somewhere else perhaps. And, but he did say, I hope that this time with us, you get to see a deeper result and fruit of your labor, as opposed to going into a church as I had done for 25 years for a few days, and not really seeing the longevity and the fruit of that in a long-term sense. Mm-hmm. And so, that was very insightful, for him to share that with me. And I appreciated it very much. And that's my prayer in this next season of my life as I'm here. So,
and what started you off on this whole thing of doing magic tricks? My bet would be that you've done that for many, many years, right?
Yes, I got tricked into it, actually. So my father, of course, being a pastor, would have guests come in for children when I was a child. And we had a pastor friend named Clyde Serrett. And he had been a missionary, and it was a pastor in Miami for a number of years, and Ohio later. And Reverend Sterrett would do magic tricks as part of his teaching, you know, illustration. And so that's where I first saw it. The context of using a magic trick to me was always in a church context. I'd never seen a magic show outside of church at that point, which is kind of odd, you know?
That is odd.
But
Because so many people would consider the arts like that not something that you would find in a church every day.
Right, exactly. And so it really was an amazing blessing. Let me preface that a little bit by saying I was born not only at a very young age, which most of us were, but
yes.
I was born with a cleft lip and palate, which is the splitting of the roof of the mouth.
Oh, really?
Gum line. And so I had lots of surgeries as a child, and my mom and dad didn't want me getting a ball thrown in my face, right? They didn't want me getting hurt with an activity of, you know, sports. And I was a small kid anyway. I was very tiny. So I had a magic set when I was a kid at some point. Maybe for a gift. I know that I won a small little Punch-Out magic set in elementary school in Kansas. And so I loved magic tricks. And of course, I'd known Reverend Sterrett. He'd come to several of my father's churches, and he showed me some tricks. And I really found that was an outlet for me, because I didn't do sports. And, you know, this was an outlet that I could learn this, you know, this art. And I found that I could engage people with it. And so I remember as a young teenager, at a church in Lakeland, after a revival service, which actually wasn't my father, it was an evangelist that was coming in, just praying, saying, you know, God, if you will bless me with this art, I will, you know, I'll glorify you with it. That was my prayer. And not that any of us want our life planned out by a 13-year-old, but God really, I think, heard that desire of my heart. And I won some awards by the time I was in high school. And then my prayer was, if I could get through college doing this, then maybe, you know, maybe there'd be a ministry opportunity. And so sure enough, I paid my way through a college in Nashville. And
what school was that?
And I went to Trevecca University in Nashville, which a Church of the Nazarene school. And so it was a great school. My mom and dad had gone there. My older sister had also gone there. And so it wasn't, again, that wasn't even an expectation. My father actually wanted me to go to a different school, but I did feel called there and felt called to Nashville. And so God has continued to bless that, and I'm still doing events and programs, you know, as I can with my schedule at the church. But it's something the church has embraced in a way, you know, and they enjoy that. And let me just really be clear for our listeners today that when we talk about magic, we're talking about tricks, very simply, that magicians do tricks and God does miracles. And there's a big difference.
Big difference. Yeah.
Big difference, yeah.
So were your tricks sleight of hand type of tricks or card tricks?
Yeah, sleight of hand. I say a little sleight of mouth too, you know. So sleight of hand, card tricks. I even did, you know, big illusions for a period of my life. In fact, in my book, which is interesting, I write about when I moved into the dorm. They had made me put, you know, a lot of my illusions area just before you go into the rooms. There's like a waiting area kind of. Mm-hmm. And so I had these, a common area. So I had these boxes and, you know, crates and that sort of thing out there. And this was a challenge. I talk about that in my book about, you know, trying to negotiate all my stuff, including the rabbit and the birds and all of that.
Oh my goodness. My guest today, Scott Humston. We'll be back with Scott in a moment. Scott is the family and connections pastor at First Baptist Mount Dora. We'll be right back. This is The Shepherd. My guest today on the line is Scott Humston. Scott is up in Mount Dora at First Baptist now, but he spent many, many years on the road as a full-time evangelist, but not your typical evangelist, at least not a typical one that I would have known, because he incorporated and still does a lot of kind of sleight of hand magic tricks as part of the presentation. So back in the day now, when you first started doing all this, I know all magicians are rather careful about revealing their little secrets of the craft and all. But I love what you say. You know, there's a big difference in doing sleight of hand and doing miracles. And The world would kind of use the word miracle, I think, rather freely, those that don't know the Lord, and attribute it to magicians, but it's not really a miracle. Only God does miracles, but if you're good, like you were obviously good, you can pull a sleight of hand and no one ever sees it coming, and it's fun, isn't it?
Oh, it is fun. I think as Christians, too, it's very important that we understand true deception and false deception. And there is a difference. We are deceived daily, right? And just, we're bombarded daily by ads, by social media, by all kinds of outside influences. And a lot of that is built upon the deception, right? That we need this or that we're not good enough for something. And, we need something to help us through. And so it is important to understand what deception looks like. And I think that just allows us to be a wise believer in that, and to know if you're watching a magician do a trick versus something else that that is more deceiving. Just important for us to be wise that way, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's coming from them, and it's a fun type of trick. It's odd that the word trick is used, because so many times that is a negative connotation. But when it comes down to being able to do what you do, how exactly were you able to, let's say, take one of your sleight of hand tricks and turn it into an object lesson? How did that work?
Right. Yeah. So there's kind of two categories in this. There's object lessons or stories. I really refer to myself as a storyteller, even as much as a magician or an illusionist. Of course, Christ used parables because people could relate to that.
Mm-hmm.
And so we used the magic tricks to really relate and connect with people. I use them to this day, magic and comedy, to connect with people, to relate to them. So in one instance, I use a magic trick to tell the story of the Good Samaritan. And I have these three rings and they change colors. And it really is, in essence, the story of the Good Samaritan. And I, for years, and still do the piece. I see it's a piece because it really is more than a trick. It has music written to it, custom music, and this background, and it just really is a live story. And I've shared that hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of times in the last 25 years all over the world to elementary age children and their families in public settings, in public schools. A big part of my ministry for many years was in public schools. And so we're able to share the gospel in an indirect way in places where maybe it would be, not acceptable in some ways, because the trick, the story is told in such a way that people relate to it. And people go, oh yeah, I've heard that story before. And so that would be one way to use the trick to illustrate a point or a story. And then really a lot of what I did was to use magic tricks and again, comedy to get people's attention, first mm-hmm. have a great
yeah,
time,
definitely.
To laugh together, and then to bring a message of hope. The Bible is real specific. It promises to bless the preaching of his word. It doesn't promise to bless magic tricks or music or programs or anything like that. All those are good and all those are important, and they all have a place in our church life and in reaching the lost. But really, his word doesn't return void. And so, again, the magic tricks were a catalyst for me in the comedy to get people's attention, to connect with them, and then, without a trick, just to share with them my story or share with them the gospel, so that I had their attention, basically. So those are the kind of the two ways I still use magic tricks, illusion, comedy, to share the gospel with people.
Hmm. Now, when you look back, Scott, what would be the trick or the piece, as it were, that you've done that you were the happiest about? I'm sure there had to be a lot of occasions where it just went right and you felt good about it. What was that? And then also, what would be one that you look back and it just didn't go right? It just kind of fell flat. What would those two be?
Oh my! Well, the answer to the question for the what fell flat, most of the time now, if something goes wrong, so to speak, it rarely happens. But if it does, I can usually cover it up pretty well. Most of the time, the audience doesn't know that. And that just comes from, you know, 25 years of doing it.
You However, cover your tracks well, huh?
Right. But there was a great story when I was 16 years old at the Florida Citrus Festival in Winter Haven. I had built a new illusion called the Metamorphosis, which is one that Houdini made popular when he was doing magic shows a long time ago, even really before he started doing escapes, because it really is kind of a magic trick. It's basically an exchange of you get locked in a trunk and you trade places with your assistant that's outside the trunk. But I got stuck in the trunk without revealing the trick. Basically, the gimmick broke, and I was, 16 and didn't have a whole lot of experience, especially with this illusion. It was new to me at that point. And so I got stuck, and my friends happened to be in the audience. They were older than I was. And so they actually came on stage and hauled me off of the stage inside the trunk.
Oh.
And my assistant at the time, she was waving to the audience and she goes, "That's our show. That's all we have for today. And we'll be here tomorrow at, 11 o'clock or whatever it was." And then you hear a voice in the back of the tent. It was a big tent. It was about a 400 seat tent that we were performing in. And, you hear this guy at the back of the tent yell, "Will he be out of the trunk by then?" And it was actually perfect. I can laugh about it today. Of course, I was highly embarrassed, at 16. But
yeah,
what's wonderful about that, Mike, first of all, it makes a fantastic story. And it's in my book as well, actually. But what's even better is it's on videotape, right?
So wow.
Now it's not on YouTube yet. It will be at some point, but I've kept it off of YouTube at this point. But
that's great.
So that was a very humbling lesson, right?
Mm.
And one that I can completely laugh at to this day. And what doesn't kill us makes great stories, right?
So, I agree.
But then as far as going right, there's so much about that I love. And I guess I'll say it this way to answer your question the best I can. I have the best seat in the audience, so to speak, when I'm doing a program or an event. I get to watch everybody else. And the art, unlike a lot of other art, is it's a group. We're participating together. I get to see everybody else. I get to see smiles, faces of people, moms and dads, bewilderment, laughter. One of the things we talked about with our show that we really encouraged was things called breakfast moments that people would have with their kids, conversations they'd have with their children the next morning at breakfast, so to speak, or maybe their dinner moments. But in other words, a poignant lesson that they're taking away from what they saw me do that they can talk about as a family.
Mm-hmm.
And so those breakfast moments were real vital to, to the ongoing ministry of what we were doing. Again, mom and dad can talk about it. And hopefully, a life lesson is brought up through that story or through that piece.
These life lessons are really, I'm sure, shining off the faces of the people that are seeing them when you do these things. You mentioned having the best seat in the house, and there really is something marvelous. I can't speak at that from being a magician, but I can from being a musician, where you see and you're playing music or whatever, and you see the people's faces. It really does for you as a, at that point, not only a performer, but you're also a minister. That had to be a very special time for you.
Yeah, no, absolutely. To see people, whether it's entertaining them with a trick or, sharing truth of scripture with them, to see people get something, react to something, understand something, is just a beautiful thing. It really is.
Now, I read you went to school, as you mentioned, at Trevecca in Nashville. You met your wife there. Tell us about that.
I did. Yeah, I did. We were actually in a science class together. She was 2 years behind me, so I had, again, been in the university for a couple of years, and she was this sun-kissed girl from, you know, the coast of Florida. And I was immediately smitten by her. And so we started dating. She did have a boyfriend back in Florida, apparently, but I put the end into that as quickly as I could. So.
Good man.
And yeah, and so we'd married for, oh my goodness, 27 years this year. So.
Wow, that's wonderful. And four kids.
And four kids. But Mike, I have to tell you this, if she ever leaves me, I'm going with her. We've worked it out. It's a plan. So we've got it. We've got it together.
Now, you mentioned using comedy. Tell me about that one. It's one thing to be a magician, but now it's an entirely different thing. And I think to be able to combine both of these arts, being able to do stand-up, so to speak, and do magic tricks, that had to be a little bit of a benefit to all of the stages that you traveled to.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I'll say it in this brief story. When I was a kid, I had created a flyer, a trifold flyer, and it said Comedy Magic with Scott Humston. And I'd used, if you remember when we were younger, the rub-on lettering, you know, these little letters you could rub mm-hmm. on with a pencil and stick to the other side of the paper, you know. And I created this flyer with my name on it and these cute little bunny rabbits and hats, and thought, this is for sure, this piece has got to get me to Carson, you know. I mean, it's just, this is the piece. It's going to make me famous. And, I mean, who doesn't like bunny rabbits coming out of hats, right?
That's right.
It's, you know, comedy magic with Scott Humston and hilarious time, et cetera, et cetera. And I remember showing it to my father, and he looked it over very astutely, read the whole thing. And he looked at me, paused, and he looked at me as only a father could. And he said, "Do you really think you're that funny?" which was a great line. I love that. And he was half serious, you know what I mean? He loved to laugh. My dad, I wouldn't call him a comedian by any stretch, but he did love to laugh, and I grew up loving to laugh as well. I enjoy finding humor in things. And using, again, humor and comedy and again, to connect with people. So I'm blessed enough to be part of a thing called Laugh All Night, which is a comedy concert for churches through New Missions, which is a great company, ministry, I should say, based here in Orlando. They have been working in Haiti for 40 years and now they're working in the Dominican Republic as well. And I became friends with the president of New Missions. And they invited me to participate in these comedy concerts they do called Laugh All Night. And in fact, right before COVID in January of 2020, we filmed a Laugh All Night comedy special at First Baptist Orlando. And that was a delight to be part of that before the world fell apart, you know?
Yeah, right.
And as we come back to some normalcy, and as you know, it's been a roller coaster, obviously, for all of us these last, you know, 19 plus months. You know, joy is something that we need now more than ever. And I think if there were any takeaway from any of this craziness that we've all lived through, is that the enemy does wish to steal our joy and to divide and conquer us. And you know, that's, you know, we're pretty much warned about that. We should sometimes take notice, you know. And I say joy, you know, joy doesn't mean you're laughing at everything every moment. Most of our listeners understand that. But true joy is a peace that passes all understanding. And in spite of horrible things, we can still have joy. Again, mm-hmm. It doesn't mean that it's a nonstop laugh fest. It's not what I mean. But we can still have joy. And sometimes joy does come out in laughter and humor. And, you know, yeah, after all, if we can't, you know, learn to just really embrace God's love for us and understand that, I mean, that if anything should make us joyful, that's it, you know, that God loved us so much that he sent his only son, you know, that we might have life and life abundantly. That's something to be joyful about.
It really is. And especially when you realize that true joy is not bound to happy things that go on in your life. You can have the joy of the Lord in your life, even going through difficult stretches like what we've done all of us have done through this coronavirus and this pandemic. But you are an example of what there are many such examples of people whose life was drastically changed and might not have gone the direction that it's gone were it not for the pandemic. But here you are now in a, I'm sure you look at it as like, I didn't see this one coming, but now you're a part of a local church, something you'd been, like you had said, maybe been considering at some point in time, but it pushed the envelope up to the front part of the stove, so to speak. And now you're doing this new thing that you might not have been doing if it weren't for the pandemic.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's one of those things that, and I've not always been great at it the last 19 months, but I like to think that I've done my very best in the midst of all of this, just having joy and, you know, thanking God. I remember probably for the first year, as we sat at home, my girls, my older girls, honestly, they were in the Dominican Republic of March of 2020. They'd spent their spring break on a mission trip, and they barely got back because they not only were they in Dominican, but then they had to come through Panama, then they had to come through New Orleans. And so when we got them back here safely on U.S. soil, they couldn't even go back to their dorm room. They had to leave everything because, you know, if you remember the chaos that was like that.
Oh, yeah.
They came home for, my oldest daughter went back a few weeks later because she had a job. And then my daughter at the time, who was a freshman at the Mississippi College there in Southern Mississippi. She was done. She was with us until the next fall. But what we did is we had every night at dinner, we had cards, index cards, and everybody wrote what they were thankful for that day on a card. And I have stacks of cards from that time period that what we're thankful for. And just coming out of Thanksgiving here, you know, it's important to remember that.
It really is. My guest today, Scott Humston. We're up against a break. We'll be back with one more segment with Scott. Don't go away. This is Afternoons with Mike here on The Shepherd. On the line today with Scott Humston, family and connections pastor at First Baptist Mount Dora. But before becoming a pastor there, Scott spent a number of years in evangelism work and utilizing not just the Word of God in his presentations where he would go, but often going into an area, maybe even going into a school, using magic, using comedy. And that opened a lot of doors for you back in those days. And the pandemic, as it was, kind of brought a lot of cancellations to a lot of events. Boy, it sure changed a lot of people's lives, didn't it?
It did. Yep, sure did. And ours included, for sure.
You know, I remember what you said in segment one. You made the comment when all of the cancellations started coming in March of 2020, that it could be a game changer. And when you look back on the world that we have now today, this many months later, what are you seeing right now as the parts of our American life, to use it that way, that's still right now maybe a bit in flux, not settled back? What do you think that would be?
Well, I think, unfortunately, children have taken the biggest brunt of all of this. And I'm not a scientist, I'm not a doctor, and I understand that, you know, there's a lot of just stuff that we have to deal with in times like this, but children that seem to be the least affected by it physically, by getting sick, have become the most affected emotionally and psychologically by it. And I think that that's really sad. As a pastor who deals with children and families on a weekly basis, a daily basis, that breaks my heart. It really does. Some children have gone through it well. Others have not. I think the tension that they feel in their families, with their parents, in society, schools, that tension has to go somewhere. Kids are not half people waiting to become full. They're valuable people right where they are. I mean, Christ even tells us, you know, for such is the kingdom of heaven, right?
Mm-hmm,
and so we have, we could have done anything better or different. I think in 10 years from now, we'll look back at this and realize the things that should have been done better and could have been done better in dealing with children through the pandemic. And children, I'm not just talking about little ones. I'm talking about all the way through, you know, high school and even into college as they mature into adults. But, you know, just how we dealt with it. I think the jury's still out, so to speak, on mm-hmm. it all, but it is hard to see that because they definitely were the most affected through it. You know, whether it was losing a loved one, right? A parent or a grandparent or just in school trying to learn with, you know, a face covering on, or, you know, not being able to play with their friends or not being able to have anything normal. You know, I think about that. Think about how many children didn't have a birthday party, you know, the last 2 years of their life. My daughter she's working on her master's in social work. And you know, she's been dealing with kids in northern Mississippi, in the poorest county of Mississippi. And those kids were out. They did not go to school for almost 2 years. Mm-hmm. So you have third graders that can't read. And you think, well, how can a third grader not read? Well, that third grader was a first grader when all this happened, and they were just learning to read, right? And so I just think there's a lot there that we're going to have to unpack as a society the next few years and have to figure out how to deal best with it. So that to me is just a hard thing, how we can help them overcome what they've lived through is a challenge.
That's really wise, and that's a good insight, not only from the standpoint of academics, but thinking about it, their emotional state. And so many are already dealing with things that would have to do with mental health, and that's become a term that almost all young people are becoming familiar with, but we really don't know how to gauge all the impact that all of this has had. And I know you were already a homeschooler, but for many, they weren't homeschoolers, and they were families thrust into doing something that A, they weren't familiar with, B, maybe they didn't even want to do, but they had to because that was the choice given to them, the only choice given to them.
Right.
But they, many of them, I fear, never stayed with it long enough to really develop what I know as a homeschooling parent myself, really the benefit that the kids get from being trained the way you've trained your kids at home.
Right. Yeah, no, for sure. I think some of them have realized that. I've talked to a few parents that they were kind of thrust into that. And now they've experienced it. They love it. And some of them not, you know, mm-hmm. the opposite, but some of them have been able to embrace that and go, oh, you know what? I understand now, you know, I do think homeschoolers in general, I don't think people complain about the idea of homeschooling as much. They know how difficult it is, you know.
That's right.
So my wife homeschooled until this year for more than 20 years.
Isn't
so,
that something?
And so, you know, is one of those things. It was a blessing for our family completely. But yeah, for other families, I know this season has been difficult trying to figure all of that out.
Well, you've been in your position now for about a year or so there at First Baptist Mount Dora. What about that area do you just love?
Well, I love Mount Dora, right? It's a slogan here in town. I've been here for 23 years, and just I love it. I love the community of it. I love the quaintness of it. A few years ago, it's probably been more than 10 years ago. I remember I was hearing the police chief at the time give a talk at a local Kiwanis organization I was a part of, and he was saying about, you know, people always move here to Mount Dora, then they want us to close the gates. You know, it's like, okay, that's enough people. Don't let anybody else in. And unfortunately, you know, with the toll roads moving up this way and people finding out about the quaintness of the area, and whether that's, again, Mount Dora or Eustis or Tavares, Golden Triangle, as they refer to it as, it is just a beautiful area. If any of your listeners have never been to downtown Mount Dora, I'd encourage them to come visit and, just check it out. It's just a beautiful little town. It's like a little New England town. And people always say there's mountains in Florida. Well, yeah, sort of. my favorite bumper sticker years ago we had on the kids' wagon was, "I climbed Mount Dora." It was a, it's always kind of a tongue-in-cheek thing, but it is a little hilly here, actually, and more than what other people are perhaps used to in Florida.
Well, I can attest to that. My son ran his first year at school and college and high school, ran cross country, and one of the first meets that he ran was in Mount Dora. And you find out just exactly how hilly it is when you're running three straight miles. And
it was
a tough run for him. I remember that. And boy, it's really odd. Most of Florida is flat as can be, and you get to Mount Dora and you've got some pretty nice little rises there and on some of those hills. It's beautiful.
No, it is. Yeah, it certainly is. It's a great town. Our church, First Baptist of Mount Dora, has been here for 99 years. So been a part of the community for a long time. Mm-hmm. This spring we'll be celebrating 100 years in March. So just really deep roots in the community. As we come through this pandemic and out the other side, just wanting people to come back and to church and to worship with us. And I would invite your listeners at, any point that they're always welcome at First Baptist Mount Dora. We'd love to have them.
It's a beautiful area up there. My wife and I have on a couple of occasions stayed at that beautiful, it's like a resort hotel or whatever. I don't know that they call it a hotel, but it's right on Lake Dora. And it is
Lakeside Inn.
That's it. The Lakeside Inn. It's beautiful. And what a wonderful place. And then getting to go to all the antique shops and everything that's there in the area. It is so much fun. A great getaway. And I highly recommend it. That's beautiful. You know, now that you're there, you've been, again, about a year or so now. And what do you see happening that God is saying for this new year? As a pastor who connects families to the local church and you're working with all of those new, what would be for you maybe a new depth of relationship with the people in the church, what do you sense, God, that the Lord is doing in this coming year as we do come out of the pandemic?
Well, I think now more than ever, people have thought and spent the last, 19 months or more thinking about death. I think that it has been on people's minds more than ever. They have had to deal with it perhaps personally through a loved one that has died during the pandemic, maybe because of the virus or maybe because of something else. The constant, and I hope people will make sure they take plenty of time to pause and get away from the news. I think that's very unhealthy for us, mm-hmm. Just the 24-hour cycles of that. But I think that people have dealt so much with that and thinking about that so much that they're tuned to, okay, what's after this, right? What's after this life? Is this all there is? And so I think the spiritual openness to people or for people now is greater than it's been in a long time. And I think as churches, as community leaders, spiritual leaders, that we need to be aware of that and need to be aware people are, thinking about their spiritual life more than they've ever thought about it before now, or at least in our lifetime.
Does that translate into spiritual considerations, not just death in the sense of how short our life is, but maybe getting involved in the church more than they would have been before?
I think so. I think that this has done a couple things for churches. It's separated the wheat from the chaff, so to speak. In other words, I remember not too long ago reading about a very large church up in, I think, the Carolinas that, had several thousand members and they're down to just a few thousand. And the pastor commented, I think we make a better church with only, 3,000 than we did with 10,000, which is interesting. So there's one way to look at it. I think people are looking, and sometimes they're looking, they don't know what they're looking for, but they're looking for stability. They're looking for a spiritual direction for themselves and for their children. And so I hope that our church, and I hope other churches as well, are understanding that and grasping that. I'll tell you something wonderful that happened to us. We had a trunk retreat a few weeks ago at First Baptist here in Mount Dora, and we had not done one since 2018. And I had prepared for about 300 people. 300 would be a good number, and prayed about that and just okay, if I get 300, it'll be good. We'll have a good number of people. We'll have a great night. Well, Mike, we had 1,300 people.
Oh, my goodness.
At our trick-or-treat.
I think all the kids that normally trick-or-treat in my neighborhood went to Mount Dora because...
I think they may have because it was a wonderful problem, We had to do a candy run in the middle of it, and we did run out of candy before it was over, but we didn't run out of, popcorn and snow cones and cotton candy and all the other good stuff and games and all of that. But it was just a blessing. It showed us that, families are looking for things to do. And it was just a blessing. I mean, earlier, the church may have had, 300 or 400 for that kind of an event. So that told me as a family pastor that, people are looking for events and they're looking for safe things to do with their children. They're not, they may not be sure what is calling them to the church. They may not understand that it's Christ, right? That he continues to call us toward him. Some people don't understand that. Mm-hmm. We hope that they'll, come into our church or a church anywhere. I know you're listening, your audience is all over, but, I'd encourage people that even if they're listening to this now, they don't plug into a church. They need to do that and find a local church that shares God's word and preaches the Bible truthfully, that they would plug in and allow their family to grow and allow themselves to grow deeper in the knowledge and the admonition of Christ.
Give us your website, Scott.
Well, I'll give you my personal website and then the church website. Is that okay?
Oh, absolutely.
So my personal website is just my name. It's scotthumston.com. So that's ScottHumst as in Tom, O-N as in Nancy, scotthumston.com. And we actually do a local show here in Mount Dora once a month, twice a month. It happens on a Friday and Saturday night. If people want to come see the show, it's a whole lot of fun. It's for grown-ups. Think of it as a date night. Encourage people to go out and have a great dinner at one of our restaurants and then come see the show. And so they can learn more about that on the website. And then as a pastor, I would be doing a disservice if I didn't invite you to First Baptist Mount Dora, and that's firstmountaindora.org, and you can find out all about our church there.
Wonderful. Scott Humston, thank you for being with us today, and we so enjoy getting to know you. And friends, thank you as well. We'll catch you next time on Afternoons with Mike.